The following message is brought to you by Terry Moore. And now, Mr. Moore.
For the message today, I'd like us to begin by turning over to John chapter 8. John chapter 8. 8. Throughout human history, there have always been people who try to deceive others for personal gain. And this kind of behavior is rooted in misusing information, misrepresenting the truth, twisting the truth, and withholding often knowledge that would otherwise reveal the whole story to people, and they would be wise to the deceit. And so therefore, deceit, it falls into this category of lies. And the root source, the beginning of all lies, is the devil. Now, speaking to religious leaders who were misusing information, misusing the scriptures even during his day, twisting the truth in order that they might have Jesus killed, Christ said this to them in John 8 and verse 44. He said, "You are of your father, the devil, and the desires of your father you want to do. For he was a murderer from the beginning and does not stand in the truth because there's no truth in him. And when he speaks a lie, he speaks from his own resources. For he is a liar and the father of it." So we understand that the source of lies, of deceit, came from the father of lies, the devil, a murderer, it says, from the beginning. Now today, in our modern age of technology, we have a common term that is used by many people, a term that was perhaps coined by President Donald Trump, fake news. And the reason for this term comes from the fact that the majority of news outlets, of sources of information regarding the state of the society and the state of the world, really, that most of them have an agenda. And so they will withhold information. They will misuse information. They will exaggerate things and even fabricate facts as to sway the public view in a certain direction. And so we live in an age where most people do not have an accurate account of what they should truly believe anymore. And people are able to pick and choose what they want to believe based on their personal preference. And the truth is no longer, I think in many ways, it is no longer based upon all of the facts. The truth has become relative. We've heard that expression. It's a matter of opinion now. Well, everyone appears to be entitled to their own facts today, whether or not they are true. And this has even affected national leaders. And while arguing about the security of America's borders, the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, she said this to Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen, after she stated a series of facts and why there needed to be some stronger sort of security around our borders, she said, "I reject your facts." Now, the reason that Ms. Pelosi rejected the facts was not because they were untrue. It was because, well, they made her to appear to be uninformed about her own party's agenda and about things that really should be done for that was best for the nation. Now, many government leaders are in this same boat, that they're victims to this idea that they can have their own sets of facts that will cancel out other people's facts, even though their own facts will go unverified. And this way of thinking has caused polarization. We've seen this today. It is widespread to the point that few are willing to have constructive, meaningful dialogue, and the decisions, therefore, that many people make in government, in business, even in families, frankly, are just downright foolish. So how did we get here? How could it be that citizens of not just America, but of nations around the world who once shared common goals and common values have become polarized to the point where fellow countrymen now hate each other, they insult each other, they intimidate each other, threaten each other, even use acts of violence against one another. Well, the book of Revelation says that the great dragon, that serpent of old, called the devil and Satan, deceives the whole world. And there are those people in the world that are deceived, most of the people that are deceived, I should say all, because a person who is deceived doesn't know they're deceived. They think they have the information they need. They think they're right on track with the truth and what's going on around them. And they think that their opinion is based on facts, even though they might be misinformed. And this is vastly what we see happening today on the left and on the right to a degree. Both sides think that their positions are based solely upon the facts, upon science, upon truth. And so how can everyone feel like that they are right when many of us are wrong? How can so many people be misinformed and really out of touch with what the truth really is? What is feeding the narrative of a growing misinformed society? Well, we know that it is, at the root, the devil. But there are other players in this. There are other individuals, companies, corporations that can be considered minions, even though they have no clue that they are being used in such a way. So the age that we live in has been called for some time the information age. But over the last, I would estimate, 4 to 6 years, that has changed. It has changed as though we are becoming the era of disinformation. A huge player in this widespread age or era of disinformation is the internet, and in particular, social media. Applications like Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat, Pinterest, Instagram, YouTube, and many others are major contributors to this age of disinformation. Now, I watched a documentary recently called The Social Dilemma, and while I found much of the information in this documentary shocking, frankly, it wasn't too surprising, because I think when we think about it, with some of the things I'm going to talk about today, a lot of it we see happening. We just don't really realize what's going on. We don't know exactly what's going on in the background. We don't quite understand it, but we see it happening. So this is information that was presented in this documentary. It's not known by much of the greater public, but it is common knowledge to the high-tech industry, often referred to as Silicon Valley, because that is where many of these companies are located, or at least have offices in Silicon Valley in the West. Now, the documentary, it was produced by Netflix, and not everybody has access to Netflix. Many people do not want access to Netflix. So I made some notes about this, and I want to share some of these with you today. And that's going to make up the bulk of the message today, because I think this is important information. This is a documentary that was that is focused on an organization that began in 2018 called the Center for Humane Technology. Now, I'm not saying that I agree with everything that this organization promotes or believes, but I think there is a lot of valuable information that can be found, because that organization, it consists of many individuals, people who have been key players and employees of big high-tech companies such as Google, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Pinterest, and many others. And they go on camera to tell the story of how we arrived at this age of unrest and misinformation, and how the apps that we use, that most people use today, are actually designed in order to extract data from the user and to use it against them, to get people to become addicted to these applications and to what they can find in them as they scroll through screen after screen after screen. Tristan Harris, I'm going to be quoting a lot of people today. Tristan Harris, former design ethicist for Google and co-founder for the Center of Humane Technology, said this. He said, when you look around you, it feels like the world is going crazy. I think we can relate. And you have to ask yourself, he says, is this normal? Or have we all fallen under some kind of spell? And so when you look at the world around us, you see there is a lot of highly unusual activity, whether it be in politics or corporate corruption, natural and unnatural disasters. We have riots that are portrayed as protests and open violence, open disrespect against police officers and the leaders of this country. And there's a multitude of problems throughout the world today. Now, the program asks this question. Is there something underlying all of this? Something that is working in the background, but really is the forefront of it all. Doesn't entirely appear to be a major contributor, but truly it's inspiring a lot of this. Now we would answer, of course, that question with yes. We know that the inspiration behind it all is truly the devil. It's the root cause of it all. But these men and women, they have come forward in order to let people know that there are tools being used in technology that are major contributors to this. Even, in fact, in many cases, an inspiration to it all, an inspiration to many of the world's problems. Roger McNamee was an early investor in Facebook and an investor in computer-related technology for over 35 years. And he said this. He said, the first 50 years of Silicon Valley, the industry made products, hardware, software, sold them to customers. Nice, simple business. But for the last 10 years, the biggest companies in Silicon Valley have been in the business of selling their users because we don't pay for the apps that we use. So advertisers pay for them. And people don't realize that we are the things being sold. Well, what's being sold? Well, we'll talk more about that. Tristan Harris said this. He said, the classic saying is, if you're not paying for the product, then you are the product. And so a lot of people think, he says, that Facebook is just a place to see what my friends are doing and see their photos. What they don't realize is that they are competing for your attention. Facebook, Snapchat, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, companies like this, their business model is to keep people engaged on the screen. That's probably not news to most of us. We don't really think about it, but that sounds like, yeah, that sounds probably pretty accurate. Now, one of the founding fathers of virtual reality is a gentleman, a kind of an odd gentleman, but very, very smart, named Jerry Lanier. And he said this, I'm sorry, Jaron Lanier. He said, that view's a little too simplistic regarding the quote that I just made. He believes that a more accurate way to put it is this. It's the gradual, slight, imperceptible change in your own behavior and perception that is the product. That is what they want from you. A slight change in what you perceive and therefore how that affects you. No matter how slight, because you do something very slight to hundreds of thousands or millions or billions of people. That's worth a lot of money. So what they have done is they've used technology and they've combined it with psychology to figure out how they can get people's attention and to hold it as long as possible. Jeff Seibert said this. He said, I left Google in 2017 due to ethical concerns, and not just at Google, but within the industry at large. And what I want people to know is that everything they're doing online is being watched, is being tracked, it's being measured. Every single action you take is carefully monitored and recorded. And so nearly every app we use and the search engines we use, they keep a record of what we search for, of where we go after we do that search, how long we spend on those websites, where do we go after that, what pages are we reading, How long did it take us to read that page? What videos are we watching? What video did we go to afterwards? What image you're looking at? How long did you look at that image? Oh yeah, how long you look at that image? All of these things are being tracked, and all of this information is being fed into these gigantic databases that use the information to see how long can we keep them engaged in this application on this screen. How long can we keep people connected to this platform? Daniel chapter 12. There are entire floors of buildings, multiple floors of buildings filled with supercomputers. Some of these are underground. Some of them, they say, are even underwater. Row after row of computers stacked on top of each other that are running codes, running algorithms, making themselves better and better at predicting what people are willing to do on the internet. What can we get them to do? And now what most don't realize is that these codes are also figuring out ways how they can slightly alter the perception and the behavior of people. And this is not some conspiracy theory. It might sound like it to somebody. You might think, oh, that guy's crazy. But no, this is not conspiracy. This is just the facts. These are facts that are well known by the high-tech industry, well known for the last decade. And now they're being shared with people, shared with the greater public. Hopefully this organization is trying to make a change in that and how they work. Daniel 12 and verse 4, God told the prophet about all of these prophecies that will come to pass before the end of the age, before Christ's return. And he said to Daniel, shut up the words, seal the book until the time of the end. And he gives a little description of the end of the age, of how people will be acting, what they will be doing. He says, many, shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall increase. Now, it has been running to and fro has been compared to our age with the transportation available, of whether it be automobiles, trains, airplanes, and the like, and that the increase of knowledge is clear today. We have clearly increased knowledge greatly over the last 50 years. It's estimated that we add actually more than 2,000 pages worth of knowledge to man's database every minute. Every minute. But could this knowledge also be described as simply data? Information. Doesn't have to necessarily be anything that's really helpful to the greater good of humanity. Just data, just information. And could the running to and fro also be compared to our own minds bouncing around on the internet from one site to another, one subject to another, back and forth and back and forth? Listen to this, watch that. Some kids today, many kids and teenagers are having a hard time even focusing on schoolwork, doing their homework, because they're so bombarded, their mind bouncing all over the place because of handheld devices. It becomes mentally exhausting. I think some of us may have felt that way ourselves. I remember a while back we decided, hey, we're going to start having days where we're going to just put away devices. And it was like a relief. It was like a day of no screens, no devices. And it's like, whoa, that felt so nice. It's like a weight off your shoulders. I think people should do that more often. Tristan Harris said something profound. He said this. He said, we're all looking for that moment when technology would overwhelm human strengths and intelligence. When is it going to replace our jobs or be smarter than humans, take us over? But there's this much earlier moment when technology exceeds and overwhelms human weaknesses. Now, he suggests that this point is being crossed right now, where companies have and are exploiting human weakness, and it's beginning to overwhelm us. The ex-senior vice president of engineering for Twitter, he said this. He said, while I was there, at Twitter that is, I always thought that fundamentally it was a force for good. I don't know if I feel that way anymore. Jaron Lanier goes on to say this. He says, we've created a world in which online connection has become primary, especially for younger generations. And yet in that world, anytime two people connect, two or more people connect, the only way it's financed is through a sneaky third person who's paying to manipulate those two people. So we've created an entire global generation of people who are raised within a context with the very meaning of communication, the very meaning of culture is manipulation. We've put deceit, he said, and sneakiness at the absolute center of everything we do. That's frightening. Can you imagine that? We've put deceit in the center of everything we do. Sounds very much like that serpent of old. Satan, the devil, who has deceived the whole world at the center of everything people do. So the deceit came from the idea that big tech could use psychology in its applications to manipulate perception, manipulate behavior, distract people from interacting with the real world and to keep them engaged on a screen. Tristan Harris explained, he said, when I was at the Stanford Persuasive Technology Lab, this is what we learned, how you could use everything we know about the psychology of what persuades people and build that into technology. The Persuasive Technology Lab, they have a lab designed for this. People learn how to do this in school. And this was applied by extracting data from the users of these applications, running many tests using various texts, various colors, and adding content to what people were doing on their computers and their handheld devices. And there are many key figures, he goes on to explain, many key figures in the internet world and in the social media world that took that class, that worked directly in the Persuasive Technology Lab so that they could take that out into the world and make their apps more addictive. For example, how about this? When you're on a device, I have a device here, and you're scrolling through it, you're kind of going like this, looking through screens after screens after screens, feeds, news feeds, what have you, going through things. Does that remind you of anything? How about slot machines? Turn it, things scroll, 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 and the user sits there anxiously awaiting for something wonderful, something exciting to appear. You never know what you're going to get. And it's the same. That's not by accident. That's by design. You never know what you're going to get. Whoa, hey, look at that. That's pretty cool. Look at this video. Oh, let's see what else we can find. It gives you a little dose of dopamine when you do that. That's by design. In psychology, it's called positive intermittent reinforcement. Positive intermittent reinforcement. And they designed it this way so that they could make these apps more addictive. It's a way of programming an unconscious habit. Just keep doing it. Just keep doing it. See what comes up. Chamath, and I'll probably mispronounce his last name, Palihapitiya. This gentleman, a very smart gentleman, he was the head of growth at Facebook for a number of years, and he was actually responsible for the growth of Facebook at phenomenal speeds. And the tactics that he designed for Facebook, they actually became the standard playbook for Silicon Valley. And he said that many tests were done. They were running tests, and they discovered that they could use subliminal tactics to get people to change their behavior, change their thoughts in just small ways, slight, ever so slight. And the user doesn't even realize what's going on. They don't even recognize what's happening, that they've been influenced in this way. And I'll quote him now. He says, so we want to psychologically figure out how to manipulate you as fast as possible and then give you back that dopamine hit. We did that brilliantly at Facebook. Instagram has done it. WhatsApp has done it. You know, Snapchat has done it. Twitter has done it. They've all done it and are still doing it. Sean Parker, former president of Facebook, said this. He He said, I mean, it's exactly the kind of thing that a hacker like myself would come up with, because you're exploiting a vulnerability in human psychology. And I think that the inventors understood this consciously, and they did it anyway. So unlike a useful tool, such as a hammer, a saw, microphone, a podium, these things are useful tools that we can use, much of social media is not really considered a tool. And the reason is because they suggest it has its own agenda. It's not really waiting, it's not really something that we can use. It's really something that wants us to use it. It's calling you. It's trying to figure out who you are, what your weaknesses are. It's trying to figure out how can I elicit a response from you? How can I keep you engaged with me for longer periods of time? And some people, we know that some people simply have addictive personalities. Some people don't. And so some people are more susceptible to these things than others. But everyone who uses social media, and YouTube is considered a form of social media, just to let you know, we are all susceptible to being played by these algorithms, by these codes that are developed by a team of engineers that are armed with an army of supercomputers. And something else for us to consider in all of this is that, think about the advent of television. You know, when television came to market, it was just amazing in the 50s, I believe, is when it was widespread, used around the country and around the world. But when it was introduced, it brought with it restrictions. Restrictions as to the kinds of things that were not allowed to be aired on television. You couldn't show pornography. You couldn't show nudity. You couldn't use foul language on television, extreme violence. You also were not allowed to market certain products on there and at certain times of day, because we weren't going to start marketing whiskey to, you know, kids watching cartoons. So there were restrictions on all this. We wanted to protect people, to protect children even. But all of that has gone out the window with the internet and with the computer age and with these applications and handheld devices. There's no regulation. There's nothing keeping certain content away from kids, from adolescents and teenagers. It's up to the parents to do something about it. They have to actually get involved, and they need to purchase software that needs to be installed on not just the devices that their kids are using, but on other devices, so you can monitor it and you can keep track of it and you can make sure you're filtering the right things, because things make their way through. And frankly, kids are very smart too. They can figure out ways to get around some of these little back doors to get around some of these this restrictive software. But the high-tech companies, they're doing something that, frankly, is something that would never have been thought of 50 years ago. See, they are asking us to allow us to regulate themselves. We can take care of our own. We can make decisions. Well, how often, let me ask you a question, how often have people done what is ethically right when doing the opposite of that increases their popularity and increases their bank account? It makes the stockholders happy. If we don't do what's ethically right, what choice are they going to make if they're allowed to just pick for themselves? They have no moral compass. Humankind was not designed with its own internal moral compass. So there are some who think that, nonetheless of what I just said, some who think that this is just simply, it's just the next level in technology. It's, you know, we're going to adapt to it. People will adapt to it as they always have, just like we adapted to the newspaper and we adapted to television when it was introduced. But what we don't realize, what this documentary suggests, and I agree with, is that we are dealing with an advancement in technology that has multiplied hundreds of thousands of times in the last 40 years. So when computers were first introduced, I don't know if any of you had an early computer. I know you had one that I used for a while when we were dating, Michelle. I think your father purchased it. The processor was very slow. We were amazed at what it can do, but I mean, the memory, I think, was what, 486 kilobytes of memory, and had a very slow processor. Minute, a fraction, a very small fraction of a fraction of what is available today. Today, the processing power has gone up nearly a trillion times. A trillion times it has gone up. This is unprecedented on what we're seeing happening. Nothing else in technology, in machinery, or what have you, nothing else has advanced at such a rate in all of human history. Now, humans, we're very good at adapting. We are, don't get me wrong. But the capabilities of our brain have not changed. We're not evolving, are we? No, it's still the same. Our hardware is still the same. Not the case when it comes to computers. So on the one side, this is a very good argument they present. On the one side, you have individuals, such as ourselves, with limited knowledge. We have limited experience about things. But on the other side of the screen, on the other side of your device, you have thousands of engineers with thousands of supercomputers working against you, working to try to get you to do something that you probably otherwise would not do. Who's going to win that? Who's going to win? Especially when people don't have willpower. Many people don't have the willpower to say, no, that's enough. I'm not going to go there. I'm not going to read that. I'm not going to fall into that. Today, we are all experiencing a pandemic of COVID-19. But I suggest that there is another pandemic going on. It's misinformation. People are being infected daily, multiple times a day, by disinformation. Millions of people are gobbling this down like candy corn on Halloween. And one man who wrote a book titled 10 Arguments for Deleting Your Social Media Accounts Right Now, and I'm not saying that we should do this, but I think we do need to be informed, but he said this, something very interesting. He said, one of the ways I try to get people to understand just how wrong news feeds from places like Facebook are is to think about Wikipedia. Now, for those of us who are not aware of what Wikipedia is, it's an online encyclopedia. It can be compared to Encyclopedia Britannica, not as notable, or I should say respectable, or even not as trustworthy as Encyclopedia Britannica. But nonetheless, Wikipedia has pages and pages of information regarding subjects that are somewhat static. That is, they look the same to all who view them. You go on Wikipedia, you're going to see the same information that somebody around the world is looking. If they're looking at the same page, you're seeing the same thing. You're going to be reading the same content, looking at the same images. So he said, when you go to a page, you're seeing the same thing as other people. So it's one of the few things online that we at least hold in common. Now imagine for a second that Wikipedia said, we're going to give each person a different, customized definition, and we're going to be paid by people for that. So Wikipedia would be spying on you. Wikipedia would calculate, you know, what's the thing I can do to get this person to change a little bit on behalf of some commercial interest. And then it would change the entry. Can you imagine that? He said. Well, you should be able to, because that's exactly what's happening on Facebook. It's exactly what's happening in your YouTube feed. The content is changing. It's not the same for everybody. Even best friends who are very close to each other, who have similar interests. Maybe they even have the same sets of friends. They might think, well, you know, I'm going to see the same things that my best friend are seeing on Facebook. But they see different worlds. And this is based upon what their likes are, what their dislikes are, based upon these computers that are calculating, churning out information, trying to keep them involved with the application, thinking that they know what's best. When really what they're doing is they're doing what's best for the company. They're doing what is best for the advertisers, paying for the ads. Now, this has led, therefore, to every person in these social media feeds having their own view, a different reality. Different things are presented to them, their own sets of facts. And now we're getting at the core of the issue, because many of the times these are not facts at all. Because people tend to accept this. People tend to accept the reality that in which they build around themselves, however it's presented to them. Over time, people begin to have this sense, well, everyone should be believing like I do. Don't they see this information? Don't they see what's going on? And once they're in this state, they're easily manipulated, changed, even slightly, because they're not as skeptical anymore. They don't have their guard up like they should, thinking, should I believe this? Should I trust this? In the program, they compare this to a magician who says, pick a card, pick any card. And what people don't realize during these magic tricks is they will pick the card that the magician wants them to pick. They already have a card in mind, and they're just playing into the magician's trick. Well, Facebook says something similar. They say, pick your subjects, pick your interests, pick your friends, and we're going to give you things all based upon that. But that's not always the case. It's not always what your interests truly are, and it's really not always what your best interest should be. Rashida Richardson, who is a professor at New York School of Law and a director of research for the AI Institute, said this. Said, we all simply are operating on a different set of facts. When that happens at scale, you're no longer able to reckon with or even consume information that contradicts with that worldview which you've created. And that means we aren't actually being objective, constructive individuals. Do we see that happening today? Are people no longer being objective, constructive individuals? Yes, on a massive scale. Justin Rosenstein adds this. He said, then you look at the other side and think, how can those people be so stupid? Look at all this information that I'm constantly seeing. How can they not see this information? And the answer is, he says, they're not seeing that information. In fact, Gulami Chaslot, former engineer for YouTube, said this. He said, at YouTube, I was working on recommendations. It worries me that an algorithm that I worked on is actually increasing polarization in society. But from the perspective of watch time, this polarization is extremely efficient at keeping people online. So some people are worried and concerned. Even this man seems to be feeling guilty about it. But the company doesn't care. They don't care about that. They care about what's the best interest of the company and the people that are paying them. What are they going to choose then? You know, what's in the best interest of you, the user, or what's in the best interest of company progress? You know, high-tech companies are the largest and the most wealthy companies in all of human history. And this is why. It was admitted that people think that these programs are designed to give them what they want, but they're not. They'll give you what you want in part. These codes are written to perform certain tasks, and they said they often take on a life of their own as they implement the codes. They get better and better at performing their functions and increasing watch time, at manipulating thoughts and behavior according to the desires of the company or the desires of the advertisers. Now, the advertisers, think about this. They don't have to be people that are selling products. Oh, yeah, we've all seen ads on Facebook or on your Twitter account. You see ads for this being sold at Amazon or those shoes. Oddly enough, whoa, I was just looking at those shows the other day. Now it's showing up over here. How did that happen? It's pretty obvious how that happened. They're spying on you. They're watching what you're doing, and they're saying, oh, let's throw this back in. But it doesn't have to be a product. It doesn't have to be a service that people are selling. The paid advertisers are simply people that are paying to get them to manipulate people, others, to slightly change your perception. The gentleman that I had quoted earlier, I think it was Jaron was his name, a little bit of an odd fellow, but very bright. He said something I thought that was very interesting. He said, imagine if somebody said, give me $10 million and I'll change the world 1%. It's a very small change, very small change. But that's the world. That's a big deal. That's worth a lot of money. And that's what we see happening today. So it makes no difference if the information that is presented to us is true or false. And these companies, Twitter, YouTube, Google, they have no way of monitoring and keeping track of what's right or what's true, what can be trusted, so they don't. What is for the greater good, or is what is in your best interest, is really not what they're concerned with. That's not what the algorithm is concerned with. Tristan Harris mentioned this. He said, at a study at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, widely known as MIT, they found that fake news on Twitter spreads 6 times faster than true news. And so he asked the question, what's the world going to look like when one side has a 6 times advantage over the other? I think we see what it's beginning to look like. As Raskin, who is the co-founder of the Center for Humane Technology, said, we've created a system that biases toward false information, not because we want to, but because false information makes the companies more money than the truth. The truth is boring. It is now a disinformation for profit business model. You make money the more you allow unregulated, that is unchecked, unverified messages to reach anyone for the best price. Facebook has trillions of these newsfeed posts, and they can't know what's real or true. And frankly, many of the people don't really care, as long as they're rolling in the cash, right? Doing what's right just because it's the right thing to do has little to do with it. And so the result has been billions of people that are bombarded with rumors, bombarded with false information. People are twisting the truth because they have agendas. And it's put out there as if it is a fact. And social media spreads this gossip, spreads this misinformation, so that people, many people, don't even know what's true anymore. They don't know what to believe anymore, but yet they think they know what to believe. They think they know what's true because I have the scoop. I have the story. I've read it. I've seen it. Imagine a world in which the motivating factors of society, that is those things that people passionately believe and act upon, are not true. Well, that's where we are headed. That is where we are headed. It's propaganda on steroids is what we see happening today. Rene D'Arresta, research manager at Stanford Internet Observatory, said this, it's not that highly motivated propagandists have never existed before. It's that the platforms now make it possible to spread manipulative narratives at phenomenal speeds and without very much money. The CEO of Rappler, which is a social news network in the Philippines, knows this firsthand. And in an interview, she was asked this question. They asked her, what does it look like when an entire country's diet consists of Facebook and social media? And her response was this: democracy crumbles quickly. Now, in the case of the Philippines, we saw that happen. It only took about 6 months in the Philippines. Now, our country and many Western nations and even Eastern nations, they are much more stable, perhaps, government-wise, than the Philippines. But for how much longer? We don't know. It's an experiment that's going on right now, this enormous experiment that we're all like little lab rats, in a way, allowing the high-tech companies and others to experiment on us to see what's going to happen next. And maybe that's not their intent, but that is what is happening. So America, we see, is facing a crisis of confidence in democracy right now. People on the left and people on the right are becoming more and more intolerant of one another, less and less willing to find some common ground and to work together. Many people have lost lifelong friends and even connections with family members because of this propagation of misinformation that is going on. And it's not just America. It's happening across Europe. It's happening in Brazil. It's happening in India. It's happening in Australia and many other places around the world. And what do all of these nations have in common? Do they have anything in common? Yes. Their societies are widely functioning on the same social media platforms as we are. And so really, if you think about it, nobody really has to hack anything. Nobody has to break into the government computers and hack the voting process and change votes from one to another. You know, Russia and China, I believe, did not have to hack the voting process in 2016 or even in this last election. All they had to do was to surreptitiously and nefariously use platforms that are already available. It's already there. Just use those. And you can influence people, change people's thought, change people's behavior. Tim Kendall, former president of Pinterest and director of monetization for Facebook for 5 years, saw a lot of this firsthand. And he says this. He said, it's easy today to lose sight of the fact that these tools have actually created some wonderful things, that they've reunited lost family members. They found organ donors. There were meaningful systemic changes happening around the world because of these platforms that were positive. I agree with that. And then he said, I think we were naive about the flip side of the coin. You see, you release these things, as they had said, you release these things and they often take on a life of their own. And how they are used many times is pretty different than how they intended or what they expected. Because nobody, I don't think, ever intended for all of this to happen, all of these consequences. I don't think there's any, you know, a few people that are just the bad guys. There are some bad guys probably in the mix, but I don't think on a larger scale, nobody really wanted for all of this to happen. But they weren't cautious. They weren't careful. They had money in their eyes and not what is the best interest of other people. They don't care that much about the user, about what's good for you, about what's good for me. So, well, all of us are connected, it seems. All the time, most people are connected, whether it be Wi-Fi on our smartphones, through routers or cable, Ethernet, this technology. It's all connected to global satellites, even if you have a hard line, like we're using the room here. That isn't a hard line directly to other people. It's connected to a satellite that's feeding this information into the air, into space, and bouncing it back down. Satellites that are swirling around the world at hundreds of miles an hour, sending massive amounts of data back and forth through the airwaves. And Satan is known as what? The prince of the power of the air, or airwaves. So you think that Satan has anything to do with the misinformation that's going on today? Or could I say the disinformation that is happening today? Oh yeah, I think he has something to do with it. Direct involvement. And so the technology available to people today, it has the ability to do great things. It really does. There are some wonderful things that have come out of the internet and the use of computers. But it also has the ability, the flip side of the coin, as Tim Kendall said, to bring out the worst in people. We've seen it bring out the frustration, the hostility, the anger, the resentment, loneliness, depression, violence can all be amplified. The volume is cranked up on these devices in some of the ways that they are used. And this makes society, therefore, more volatile and, in turn, more unstable. So if everybody is entitled to their own facts about just about every issue that is out there, well, there's no need for people to try to get together, try to have meaningful, constructive conversations anymore. And when people can't agree about what is a stable truth, when there's no compromise between people in a society, no willingness to agree even, that society is going to fail. It's just a matter of time. And we're living in a society, I think, that is on that path. We're going down that path of failure. It's drifting further and further away from the values of democracy that it once had. We've lost touch with what is real and what is true because everybody feels like they're entitled to their own sets of facts. 2 Corinthians 6, and we'll end over here. When Tim Kendall, who was once a major league player for Facebook and Pinterest, and this gentleman is still active in the social media community, but he's trying to do something positive, something for good, he was asked this question. He was asked, "What are you most worried about?" He kind of sighed. And his response was, in the shortest time horizon, civil war. Could we be headed in that direction? Many people would say we can. And we see evidence of that. And if so, what is going to keep you and me safe when society begins to crumble? Much of the internet, and in particular social media, and most once respectable news agencies have shown us that they can't be trusted. Deceit is a standard practice today, and misinformation is bounced all around the world and through the airwaves. And since we know who the power of the prince of the air, the prince of the power of the air is, the internet is one of Satan's playgrounds, isn't it? I'm not saying it's all bad, but it's definitely being used. And so this doesn't mean that, you know, we have to throw out our computers. Don't get on the internet. Don't get on a social media platform. This message is not about telling us to stop using those things. It is about telling us to be aware and to beware, to be cautious about it, and to not play into this. Don't be a part of it. Don't be a part of the spread of misinformation in this age. We don't want to be part of the deceit and contribute to this spread of polarization in society. It might be wise, though, if we perhaps choose to limit our use on some of these devices. I know it can be helpful for many people because they are addictive, and that's by design. It's not by accident, because we are living in a world that has less and less of God's values. The Apostle Paul told us this in 2 Corinthians 6 and verse 14. Do not be unequally yoked together with unbelievers. For what fellowship has righteousness with lawlessness? And what communion has light with darkness? And what accord has Christ with Belial? Who is a term meaning a person of low esteem, who isn't proper. Or what part has a believer with an unbeliever? And what agreement has the temple of God with idols? And for you are the temple of the living God. As God has said, I will dwell in them and walk among them, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people. And so, does any of this sound like what we might be socializing with on the internet? People of Belial, lawlessness, darkness? Do we find ourselves in that place far too often? Do not be unequally yoked together with unbelievers. Be careful. Therefore, as he continued to write, verse 17, actually quoting Leviticus 11, come out from among them and be separate, says the Eternal. Do not touch what is unclean, and I will receive you. I will be a father to you, and you shall be my sons and daughters, says the Eternal Almighty. This is where our focus needs to be. And those things that are good, wholesome, those things of great value, those things that are everlasting, not those things that are going to fade away. So as those around us are becoming more and more uncertain, people are becoming more and more angry, more afraid, more polarized, God will protect us during all of this. When all hell breaks loose, pardon the expression, God will be there for us if we stay focused on Him, if we stay focused on His values, if we are wise as serpents, but harmless as doves. If our focus is on keeping the commandments, on trusting Him, on doing well, treating each other with respect and with kindness, we can be found worthy to escape. Christ told us to pray that we are counted worthy to escape those things which shall surely come to pass. They will come to pass. You can bet your bottom dollar. Encouraging gambling, the expression goes, bet your bottom dollar, your last dollar on it, because it's going to happen. But we can escape. We can be kept safe. But don't think of it as, I need to do what I can to save my skin. Think of it as this. doing the right thing simply because it's the right thing to do. Nahum, the prophet Nahum, said that the eternal is good, and he is a stronghold in the day of trouble. And he knows those, meaning he will have a relationship with those. He will protect those who trust in him.